Hi, everybody. My name is Josh Nason. This is Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. Welcome back. If you're hearing this, Black Friday is either happening today or it could be Saturday, Sunday, whenever you're listening to this. Hope you're having a great American Thanksgiving weekend here in the U.S. or wherever you are in this fine world. The Year in Review series for pro wrestling 2025 continues with a stop in the month of May. Joining me, a returning guest, Warren Hayes, a voice of wrestling, and also his own podcast and live stream on YouTube. Warren and I talked for about an hour and a half, 2 hours, I think, about everything that happened in the month of May. Very fun conversation. Of course, we talked about AEW Double or Nothing. WWE had a very newsworthy month. They had Backlash, WrestleMania 42 out of New Orleans. Poor New Orleans. Saturday night's main event. They did a bunch of cuts that month. Of course, we had the best in what I'm calling NXT TNA. NXT, AAA, and TNA. Japan, the junk drawer. Of course, the passing of Sabu at 60 years old. We talk about that. And yeah, like several hundred headlines we go through. It's very fun. 2 hours and latest entry in the Pro Wrestling Year Interview Series continues right now with Josh Nason being me and Warren Hayes being him, talking right about now. It is that time of year once again to talk about the year in pro wrestling of our Lord, whatever Lord you pray to or not. 2025, the month of May, a fine 31 days, if I say so myself, rejoining me for a second go-round here on Josh Nason's Punch-Out in this specific series, the one and only Warren Hayes. Warren Hayes, welcome back. Mr. Magenta, people will not know what that means if they're listening to this, but you and I do. Welcome back. Glad to have you.
That is me. Hi, how you doing, Josh? Thank you for having me once again on the end of year stuff. It's I'm excited to break down a full month of wrestling stuff with you. It was a fun time last time. I'm great. I'm excited to do it again.
Same here. I'm always jealous of your wood floors, which people cannot see.
You know, like they're quite old, frankly, like they need like they would require like the full like a full sanding, you know, the whole nine yards. We'd really have to get down and dirty with them. But, you know, they're still very nice. Yes. You know, like one thing that I've noticed, you live in the U.S., correct?
I live in New Hampshire.
In New Hampshire. Yeah. Like a lot of in the U.S., there is still like there's carpeting. Everyone has carpets, I find, right? There's a lot of carpet. Here, it's the complete opposite. No one has carpets. If they have carpets, it's in their basement, right? Like if they have a finished basement, you know, where they have a rumpus room. Do we still use the term rumpus room?
Am I aging myself here? I like it.
You know, if we have that set up, you know, usually you'll have some carpet there because, you know, it's a little colder, whatnot. But most people around here, there is no carpeting anywhere to be found. So you'll get a lot of hardwood floors pretty much everywhere you go because people love the hardwood.
Yeah,
they're just in. It's like, but I appreciate the compliment. Thank you. And I look at them and I'm like, yeah, you know, they could use some love, but. But I appreciate the compliment nonetheless.
Shout out to wood floors. Absolutely.
Shout out.
So you have your, of course, your YouTube channel. And where else can people read you? I'm blanking right now. Are you doing the podcast simply on YouTube these days?
No. Well, YouTube is pretty much like home base for me. Because yes, the podcast does end up there, but also ends up on all good podcast platforms. But I also do live streams on YouTube quite a bit, a couple of times a week anyway. So that also generates some content for the podcast and so on and so forth. So, and got a good little community going. So that's a lot of fun over on youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes. And I also write for Voices of Wrestling over at voicesofwrestling.com. I'm not the most prolific writer, you know, thankfully Rich Kreich doesn't, admonish me, for any reasons, regarding my output. He's very kind to me, and he still lets me hang around. So yeah, but that's nonetheless where you can find writings if you're not interested in listening to my voice, which honestly, I don't blame you.
Yeah, we have. I got to know you through Jesse Collings, some conversations you had with him. He was on earlier in the series. Rich Craich was just on the last episode. So yeah, a good good VOW representation on this series, which means you should go over and check that out, voiceofwrestling.com. A lot of very, very smart people there, and more to come, I'm sure.
Good folks over there.
So let's go to the month of May. If you are here for the first time, welcome. I would invite you to go listen to all the other episodes in the series. Here's how it works. We do 12 episodes, so every month has its own episodes, because there are 12 months in the year. I learned that finally. And it's a different guest each time. And what we do is I go through the hundreds and hundreds of headlines on WrestlingObserver.com for each month. I get an export. And I go through and I say, okay, these were newsworthy. These were results. Where do they fit? And there's some, they go to the scrapyard, you know, match announcements, these type of things. But I boil them down to about probably 300 or so, maybe we're looking at maybe 200. And some people say, how can you get that done in under 12 hours? Well, I certainly can. We've had shows that go 4 hours. We've had shows that go 1 hour. And but regardless, the goal of the series is we go so much into what's next, what's now, what's next, what's now. We never look back at what just happened months ago. And I think in this perspective, as we're recording in late November, perspective what happened in May. And we think, as I say a lot in this series, there are things that we, in the moment, back in that month, will look back on and say, this is going to matter. Or I can't believe this happened. And we'll see here months later, and it didn't mean jack shit, right? I mean, this is just, or some things that like, this led to this, the Plinko board, right? And so that's why I really enjoy doing this. And guests as yourself who remember a lot of these things, like talk about these things, it's makes for fun conversations.
No, and May has a couple of these events, like these things where we're like, oh boy, look at this happening. And yeah, just a couple of months later, just it becomes irrelevant or non-news or whatever. May's a very interesting month. I was looking over the notes before, obviously, before starting up, obviously, and it's a very interesting month. There's a lot of stuff happening. I'm excited to get into it.
Let's do it. So this month we'll kick off with AEW/ Ring of Honor. And of course we'll start with Double or Nothing. So a few obviously things happening in Double or Nothing, of course, happening for the first time outside of Las Vegas. This was in Glendale, Arizona, I believe. So just outside of Phoenix. And Hangman Page and Mercedes Moné won their respective Owen Hart tournaments, of course, leading to future title shots at All In. So it's a nice connection point there with no pay-per-view, no AEW pay-per-view in June. So obviously leading to July. So it was a nice hook there. Team Strickland, Swerve Strickland, of course, won the Anarchy in the Arena match. Wild as always. Hook returned as part of that show and then would disappear for quite some time. Of course, he was a big part of Full Gear as well. Hiroshi Tanahashi, the president, the ace of New Japan Pro Wrestling, made a surprise appearance on that show very late, as I remember, helping Paragon. Mm-hmm. I believe that was the second to the last match in that. It was kind of one of those, it was getting late in the night, and it was like, okay, what are we doing here? And then Tanahashi made an appearance to cap things off there as part of his retirement year. Harley Cameron was injured at the show and also announced that she was taking some time off. But yeah, overall, Double or Nothing, the big news for me coming out of this course is we had direction for the title matches at All In, and we knew we were going to get two big ones in Hangman Page versus Moxley and Moné versus Tony Storm. So as they're really trying to make this show as like their WrestleMania, their big show of the year, it's a good way to start.
Yeah, it confirmed a lot of things. I think the big match results ended up, I think, answering what a lot of people were hoping for. You know, like of course there were, how many thousands of people were just waiting for Hangman Page to get that opportunity. Like this was, we were right prime in the midst of peak Hangman fan anxiety, right? Where everything that's happening in regards to Hangman was followed with microscopic attention. Everything was super scrutinized. Because the Hangman fans absolutely wanted Hangman to win, to go over and finally make it to All In. And we were in that final stretch of that anxiety. And, you know, I myself on the podcast, once he won the Owen, I kept telling everyone over and over again, is like, look, if you're a Hangman fan, I cannot tell you this enough. It's fine. Now, from this moment on, it's fine. Like, there's no way, there was no really conceivable way that you could book Hangman into losing at All In. It just didn't make sense. It just didn't connect. And I was trying to reassure every Hangman fan I ran into, because that anxiety was so high at that point.
It was.
Yep. And it's kind of back now as we're recording this. But it really reached a fever pitch. And Tony and Mercedes was arguably, if it wasn't the biggest match they had, it was the second biggest. You know, you could make a compelling argument that Hangman and Mox wasn't as big of a match as Mercedes and Tony, which is practically something you could have just like dumped without a story and say, this is our big drawing match. And everyone's going to go, yep, this is the biggest women's match you could put on. It's one of the biggest matches the company could put on. And they were, and they decided to lean into that as well, which created a whole other bunch of anxiety, because you know Tony Storm fans, turns out they're pretty intense about Tony's championships as well. You know, they're pretty protective of her on that front as well. So yeah, look, it was an exciting pay per view that really set the stage for the rest of the summer, right up until Texas, and it was, from memory, this was a very, very good pay-per-view. On top of that, Anarchy in the Arena was awesome this year.
Yep.
Like, I thought it was tremendous. The past couple of years, I thought they were so-so, and they really found like they really recaptured the wild, completely absurd aspect of it that I think made the first the first couple of attempts at it very, very endearing and charming and fun. I think they were able to recapture that, to rebottle that. It was tremendous.
Yeah, so a few notes on this. Of course, Hangman Page defeating Will Ospreay in the finals. That was a main event of the night, going almost 37 minutes. The Anarchy in the Arena match, which you mentioned. If you remember, and I forgot this till I just saw this, do you remember what song played over and over and over again that we had not heard in quite some time?
There were two, right? There were two, because
I'm trying to remember what the first.
Go one. Ahead, go ahead. I'm drawing a blank.
So
I apologize.
The one that comes up is Drowning Pool's Bodies. Let the Bodies Hit the Floor, and they kept playing it over and over. I think. Oh, I'm sorry. It was the Young Bucks that did the 1872 interlude, but like the kind of the Yankee style, yeah, you know, yes. Like whatever.
They did a revolutionary theme,
yes.
Right?
Yes,
like,
yes,
yes. And then And then Kenny was like, no, we're going back to the 2000s or something like that, right? We're going,
yep.
And then Bodies kicked in, and
they played it like three times over. It added to that chaotic.
I don't know why I forgot that. That was extremely iconic for anyone who was into wrestling in the 2000s.
Oh my God.
You know, yeah. and new rock. I'm practically embarrassed that I forgot that, because that was really, that made me laugh out loud.
And then other notes, Mercedes Moné defeating Jamie Hayter in the finals there. That was earlier in the show. But yeah, a 11-match main card, or 11-match card overall. Yeah, it was the page, as you mentioned, the anxiety of what's going to happen. I think it just felt right, just based on the angle and the storyline, that Paige had to win. And he had to win here, and he had to go on. Because otherwise, to your point, it didn't make any sense otherwise. And you don't do all this long stretch. You don't go this far to only go this far. And they weren't going to cut the legs out from him at that point.
It would have been a mistake. And let's again, we have the benefit of 2020 vision right now, right? What if they had gone with Ospreay? Ospreay would have still have to taken some time off to go have his surgeries. So that would have blown up in their face. You know, maybe that's part of the decision. Maybe they knew that at the time. You know, we don't know. Like, I don't know. Maybe they knew Ospreay needed to take some time off, and they were like, well, we're not going to do it. But regardless, whatever decision motivated putting Hangman in the spot, was perfect. Like he was coming out of the heel turn of completely losing his way, just, you know, being completely unhinged, having those great matches with Swerve. And now he was sort of finding his footing again, returning into the babyface, into the guy that everyone loves. And it just like the entire storyline just made complete sense. There was a very good through line through it all. Mm-hmm. So it would have been a little awkward to not end the tournament with Hangman, you know, and good for him. I think it was the right choice. I absolutely think it was the right choice, and it made for a compelling main event at All In. It was very good. I'm glad they didn't pick Ospreay. I know there's still some debate around that, but I'm glad they didn't pick Ospreay.
Same here. We'll go through this first chunk of headlines, and I'll kick it over to you for thoughts of anything that sticks out. Konosuke Takeshita and Yuka Sakazaki confirm that they are actually married. AEW versus CMLL's week in Mexico for June taking shape. Of course, part of three events there, not just AEW Grand Slam, but the AEW and Ring of Honor versus CMLL show on a Tuesday, and Fantastica Mania on that Friday. So we had the Don Callis family, Red Velvet, Bandido, and crew announced for the show. Thunder Rosa was set for Fantastica Mania. And the main event would be Bandido versus Masquerade for the Ring of Honor world title. Jim Ross revealed he had colon cancer, said that he had surgery, said it was a success. Tekla made her debut on Dynamite, attacked Jamie Hayter. Most people remember this because the camera, it's not, they went to the shot too late, or she wasn't ready, or a combination of everything. But that was Tekla's debut, Jamie Hayter being in the wrong spot at the wrong time. MVP said he has zero respect for Triple H due to past personal interactions. That'll be a theme that went throughout the year in his interviews. Mariah May officially removed from the AEW roster page. At that point, still believed to be WWE bound. Spoiler alert, she was. The Righteous, EJ and Duka, Bear Bronson, and Abaddon, all gone from the company as their contracts here. They expired. Actually, for all of them, their contracts expired and not brought back. Rhino was advertised for two shows in Detroit, AEW and Ring of Honor events. The company announced a 7-show residency at the former ECW Arena in Philadelphia, and also a 6-show Chicago residency, and that's going to be something that's continuing in 2026 as well. They already have one announced for Arlington, Texas, so I'm sure that's going to be something that continues in the future. Who knows if they'll do different cities. Darby Allin reached the Mount Everest summit and also set the kickflip world record while he was up there as well. A book chronicling AEW's first 5 years was set for November release. That would be a one in conjunction with the company, not a independent release, which I think would be an unauthorized look, would be tremendous if you get people on the record. I don't know if we'll ever get that, maybe down the road, perhaps in time, and hopefully time heals all wounds and people will be talking. I think it'd be a great book. And finally, Josh Alexander was saying that TNA never made an offer before he joined AEW. And he said, however, a WWE NXT title match was offered to him, but he turned it down while he was still at TNA. Thoughts about any of that?
Well, look, congratulations on Takeshita and Yuka Sakazaki. You know, I once interviewed Yuka Sakazaki a few years ago, and during the interview, I asked her, you know, well, what's one of the things that that's missing in your career right now, right? I'll always remember this. It's just because it was so funny. She says, "Oh, I want to wrestle animals." Okay, all right.
Okay.
And I'm like, "What kind of animal would you like to wrestle?" And without a pause, like once the translator gets my question through, she says, and I quote, "A Komodo dragon."
Wow. All right.
Yeah, like just straight out. Like, okay. All right. So anyway. Just a little anecdote there. I don't have any real thoughts on their marriage, obviously. It always makes me laugh, that little story. The week that AEW spent in Mexico was a lot of fun. That was tremendous stuff. I thought the Arena Mexico Dynamite was dynamite. I thought it was great. I thought it was, you know, the Arena Mexico crowd was super into it. Like they packed the place up on top of that. I was really, really surprised. Every night that they put on a show in Arena Mexico that week, there was tons of people there, capping it all off with a really fun Friday show, the Fantastica Mania. It was just a lot of fun. I'm really digging. I dig the idea of the partnership with CMLL between AEW and CMLL, Josh, because I feel like the exchanges have really been fun. They've been interesting. It's probably easier too on the talent to fly over to Mexico over than, you know, to, I don't know, Tokyo or Osaka or Hamamatsu or, you know, wherever. Not only do I think, I know it's easier to fly to Mexico, you know, and so those exchanges have been interesting, though. I still feel AEW could go deeper. I think we could do more stuff with more of the talent. You know, sometimes I feel it's a little unbalanced. You know, I'll give you an example. Like, we're in November right now, right? You said it earlier. You have Commander, right? Who, Ring of Honor regular Commander, who will be loaned out to go do a show in Arena Mexico, and he's going to be in a main event. And we're going to get Místico, who is arguably like the biggest wrestling star in, you know, the world, maybe even, you know, like, and he gets put on a pre-show. We have a pay-per-view in the US. Before you hit the comments, I know it wasn't a real pre-show match. Bear with me for the analogy here. Okay. I think we could be doing a little more. But then again, you know, look, Mascara Dorada is going to be in the Continental Classic, and he had that great performance in the trios match with at Wrestle Dream with Okada and Takeshita. So, you know, am I just being, you know, nitpicky and bitchy? Feel free to let me know, Josh. Other than that, Mariah May on her way. I mean, that was inevitable. I think it was just like a thing that was inevitably going to happen. But what a way to go out, though. Like, let's be honest. Like, as far as leaving a territory, like, if we're going to use old lingo, I mean, you couldn't have a better exit from a territory than that. You come in, you do your thing, you become world champion, you have your defenses, and you go out on arguably one of the greatest matches that the company has put on this year, and you move on to another territory. I don't know. Like, you don't get those kind of exits very often in modern wrestling with contracts and whatnot. Like, I thought Mariah May's departure from AEW was excellent.
I agree.
Yeah, I've got no other notes than that. I thought it was tremendous. The departures, I guess, the departures, the Righteous, Nduka, Abaddon. Like, Nduka, I always wondered what was the thing that was keeping him back, like, especially when he was in NXT, right? Because, you know, he's a big dude. He's got presence. He's got, like, this natural charisma going. I was like, what's the thing that's not connecting? You know what? Mm-hmm. And so I was really interested when Tony brought him on board into the, you know, the TK-verse, right? Mm-hmm. And had him do some Ring of Honor stuff. And you're like, he's got something, but he needs more work. Like, he's really, really unpolished, I thought. But then at the same time, like, he's in his mid-30s. So how much do you really want to invest into the guy at this point? If he's so green and so advanced in age, you know, it's like, well, when are you going to get your return on investment at this point? And I, you know, on one hand, I understand the decision of his release. On the other hand, I'm disappointed because I guess I really wanted the Judge to work out. I guess that's the thing, right? I really wanted it to work out. Bear Bronson sucks because, you know, he's, you know, because of what happened with his tag team partner and all that, like, that kind of stinks.
Have you ever seen a Bear Bronson singles match? Like, a recent one?
I saw one of his death matches. I can't remember which one there. He did a death match recently, but go ahead.
Sure. I will tell you, having seen him in person in a crowd about 400 to 500 several times, There's meat on that bone. He's a lot, he's a lot better, and he's had it. I've never met him. I just know that from what I saw, from what the Iron Savages, and that was just not good, to what he's doing now, terrible. And not even the death matches stuff, but just straight on like hard hitting matches. I don't think he's ever going to get to a WWE type thing, but I think he's got some juice left in him, and I think he's kind of finally reveling the fact that he's not kind of stuck in a comedy tag team. You know what I mean? So I would say that he's a little bit better than even I gave him credit for. And I think he's starting to show it now. Yeah, yeah.
I'm glad to hear it, because I was going to give him on top of that some praise of just like hitting the indies and trying to, like, I think he understands that he kind of has to rebuild his identity as a singles guy, right? Yeah, yeah. Which is fair. And I think he understands that. And I think that's all to his credit. I would assume the door's not completely closed with AEW, right? I would assume that.
Yeah, you know, I just don't know where they would use him. He'd be a Ring of Honor guy, but I think he would have to have some sort of a better understanding. I think a lot of these people, if they're going back, want to have a better understanding of what are they get, what's the plan, right? Because you don't want to go with Guantanamo Bay, as it's been called, right? And just be like, just stuck in like, there's a huge roster. What am I doing? Because these guys and girls, they want to work. And we can talk more about that later, because I want, in the WWE releases, I want to talk about some of the things you mentioned as well.
Sure. And good for Darby being on the top of Mount Everest. I mean, that's fantastic. Something probably derailed some creative plans, but hey, you know.
I'm surprised. I don't know if they tried to make him, like, to me, I would have, if I'm AEW, I would have tried to get him to do more like national interviews. Pro wrestler climbs Mount Everest. I think that could have been pretty good.
Sure.
For the company. And to me, that's a pretty easy story to tell. And I think probably a lot of producers are like, oh, that sounds interesting, especially because he has a, you know, a specific look and an interesting, you know, background, things like that.
I'm got a great story.
I don't know if they tried, or I'm that's what I kind of look back on, and you don't really have many of those if you're kind of a challenger brand, as Tony Khan has said, to kind of break through to the mainstream, because WB is so much just tentacles everywhere. I just wonder about that, if they really tried as hard and if there was a bigger opportunity to make that more of a known thing. And my hope is that they didn't not try, because they wanted to say, well, we're going to save this big surprise return for July. Cause that, to me, like, you had a lot of time between between that happening and all to be able to do some interviews or something like that. So I don't know. I'm curious about that.
I don't think you should kayfabe to the point of, you know, keeping your company from having some good press, easy stories that build some goodwill. I agree. No, you're right. I hadn't thought about it that way. You're absolutely right. Actually, we can only hope that they did try.
Let's go to this second chunk. AEW debuted a brand new Dynamite intro song, that being by Sum 41. A year of new intro songs with the Pointer Sisters at the beginning of the year, which we talked about in the first episode. Remains one of the strangest things in AEW history by far. The spider graphic to tease Tekla's arrival started appearing on the broadcast. Ricochet was set to face Zach Gowen. Yes, Zach Gowen at Beach Break. Sky Blue made her return from injury at Beach Break. Dick Camerato returned after a long, near 9-month absence due to injury, and was on one match, and that was it. The workhorsemen, Anthony Henry and JD Drake, 100% officially cleared to return. Also, a great tag team, is probably never going to get their full run at AEW. If anyone that's seen them in person, I think, would agree with that. Steve Mongo Michael, the late Mongo from WCW days, and of course the NFL, was honored in AEW Collision after his passing in April due to a long battle with ALS. Ric Flair appeared on that show to honor him. AEW signed a productivity drink sponsor, and the contract details were revealed. This is iDrink. I was so fascinated with this story because the contract details were published on the CEO's blog, and it was like $3.5 million for this, and we're going to do this and have all this. And it's like essentially copy and paste a contract on his website. And if you look into the background of the CEO, he had been essentially disgraced. I think he was a colonel in the army.
He was an officer. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was involved in, basically just some not great dealings there. And he opened up this drink company, ate it, wouldn't sponsor, deal with him. It's like, God, it seems like a lot of money for a company. And So I published this and I remember noticing it. And then eventually the post on that blog disappeared. And I had asked about the eye drink thing. I don't think I'm ever going to answer on it, but it remains one of these weird stories to me that just sticks with me of like, because they're still around. There's just this whole contract. It's one of those things that, you know, just stuck with me. Soraya said she turned down a love storyline with Daddy Magic in AEW. AEW Dynamite was their 300th episode announced for Ontario, California, not, of course, Ontario, Canada. Jake Roberts underwent heart ablation surgery. Willow Nightingale re-signed with the company. MJF was voted into the Hurt Syndicate, and he was a set sign his contract. This is a storyline that just was like, are we interested in this? And then it just disappeared. It just got dropped. And it's one of the stranger things, which you think there's something going on behind the scenes to make that stop. An episode of Collision had to end early ended early on TV due to technical issues. I remember that. All Out was announced to be going international for the first time ever, heading to Toronto. AEW officially announced Mina Shirakawa signed with the company. And then there was the music change. Remember an episode, I believe, of Dynamite. She came out to a song. People did not like it online. By the time the match was done, she exited to her old song because Tony Khan was paying attention perpetually online, just like the rest of us. Kenny Omega said Hikaru Shida's visa renewal taking quite a while because she was gone. People were like, where is she? Scorpio Sky addressed his multi-year absence. I don't know if there's bad blood or not, he said. And then Bryan Danielson made a surprise appearance at the Dean Rasmussen tribute show that took place the day before Double or Nothing in the parking lot in Glendale, Arizona. Thoughts about any of that?
Oh, there's a lot of stuff happening here. Zach Gowen, I was really pumped. Like I was really pumped to see Zach Gowen back on television. And the thing is that I it turns out I had to explain to a lot of fans, Josh, who Zach Gowen was. And they were because you know, they didn't realize that this was the one-legged wrestler. There's a lot of people who just they don't know about Zach Gowen. Josh. How old are we, Josh?
We remember. You know what? This is when we had like two shows a week to watch, maybe three if you watch TNA, and Hulk Hogan's Celebrity Championship Wrestling. That was the stuff that we had to watch. And people now, again, the kids, they don't know how easy they have it with this YouTube thing and all these things. We had to trade VHS tapes and hope that the tab was still just a whole thing, right? I mean, this is exactly someone in tape over it, yeah.
But that was a good little nostalgia kick. And you know what I really, really appreciated is how good it worked with Ricochet's heel persona. Like Ricochet was absolutely the perfect guy to get in there and beat up like a one-legged pro wrestler. I don't know if you spoke about this on previous months for this run here, but Ricochet in AEW has been just an absolute delight. And it's crazy when you think like when they decided to finally do the full heel turn in AEW and then him just completely running with it and doing some legitimately compelling heel work. Yeah, his in-ring is great. It's Ricochet. It's fine. You know, his bump card is didn't exactly get filled up while he was in WWE. But just being able for him to stretch his legs and do things that the other place never ever even seemed to dream to let him do. And him being successful at it, it's been fantastic, which is why, like, I look back at this headline and, like, Ricochet, Zach Gowen. Yeah, that was great. And it was great because Ricochet is such a great heel. And think about the entirety of his AEW run. Could you imagine saying Ricochet is a great in-ring personality, Josh? Mm. No one would buy that because they barely let the guy talk. And when he did talk, it was stiff. It was contrived. Clearly, he wasn't comfortable with, you know, reading off scripts and whatnot. But the minute they decide to tap into his personal strengths, he just explodes and grows. Like Ricochet in AEW has been absolutely fantastic. I think guys like you and me, we all have very fond memories of Steve McMichael. You know,
Pepe the dog,
the little dog, Pepe the dog, for instance, you know, and all of my, Mongo for a long time used to be a guy I'd love to riff on because, you know, he's no technical master. This is not a Zack Sabre Jr. It's not a Ricky Steamboat. You know, it's Mongo was messy as hell. And that's ultimately what made his charm, you know, at the same time is just, he was just like such a brute force of nature that made him so incredibly endearing. Of course, the promos that he cut that would always verge on being unhinged, but never got too far, was just a big dumb jock doing pro wrestling, and you loved him for it. You know, that was ultimately Mongo's biggest charm, and of course he'll be missed. And I still don't understand exactly what iDrink does. What is a productivity drink?
Good luck explaining that one. Yeah.
I work in marketing. Okay. I work in PR and marketing. That is some fantastic copy, like a productivity drink. I got to tell you, hats off. Willa Nightingale re-signing with AEW I don't think anyone is surprised. I think she has tons to do left. I think she's gonna have a really good 2026. I got a good feeling, Josh. I think she's gonna have a really, really special, spectacular 2026. So that would be my vibe about it.
Well overdue. Yeah. I've said this before in the show. She should have been the one to end Jade Cargill's streak. With all apologies to the stat freaks. The Statlander fans, she's right there, and she deserves a nice big world title win. Maybe she's going to be the one to beat Mercedes, but she is long overdue to have that moment, a great build, and get behind her, because she's. I remember when I saw her in Boston. This was one of the Dynamite tapings at the Gans Arena. And she was on Rampage, I believe. And people knew her because she's kind of local, like Northeast regional. And the fans really get into her. And this was, again, early on. And there was just you kind of felt it, you know? And like, okay, people really are into her. And then as that win, it just progressed. And it's like, this is, you have something here. And that's the thing. Baby faces are so like, they're really hard to book these days because people don't really want to do them. And there's this natural, when some people have that natural, I like that person, that's something you just like the Bryan Danielson type. So Will Knight get like, that's what you just need to kind of just get behind that and just be like, we have something here. And they do. I just hope they don't wait too long.
No, I hope not either. You could even make an argument that it's been a long time coming. Let's put it that way. Yeah. You know that, you know, we're kind of overdue. Cause yeah, I saw her just as she was starting, you know, doing occasional work for AEW. And I'm talking, you know, not way before she was signed, you know, she'd show up once in a while on Dark and stuff like that. I saw her at C4 over in Ottawa, and you know, the audience just went crazy for her as she, the more she wrestled, the more she connected with the audience. Like you could feel the swell of support happen during her match. You know, she'd come out and people would applaud and she's very energetic. You know, she goes around, slaps everyone's hands. That's her thing. Right. And you're like, yay. But you know, no one is really super familiar because she's not Willow Nightingale, national wrestling television star. Right. It's just like, you know, maybe you knew her from her tag team with what's her name? The Bird and the Bee. Well, who was the other one? I'm drawing a blank. You know, she was in a tag team for quite a bit.
In AEW?
No, out in the Indies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I can't remember. Anyway, I remember the tag team name was called the Bird and the Bee. There was something in the Bee.
I got it right now. Was it Solo Darling?
Solo Darling. There you go. Thank you.
That's a deep cut. I like that.
Yeah. And I had saw her a couple of times because she worked Beyond and stuff like that. They worked Beyond and they had done the for the culture shows, and you know they got around a little bit. So you know, maybe you knew Willow from from that, but she wasn't this big star, but she just got the audience behind her, you know, at that C4 show. Cause she just has that natural ability. She just has that intangible, right? Those intangibles. Yeah. You can't teach the intangibles. And I look, if you ask me, the perfect story is her circling back to Mercedes Moné a year later and getting the TBS title back, because Moné took the title off of her, and I think it would be a great full circle moment. And then from that point on, Mercedes loses all confidence and loses all her belts, and she's just a wreck. I think that's what I do. She should be the one who creates the downfall of Mercedes Moné.
Absolutely.
That would be a great feather in her cap.
Without looking, how many career matches did Steve McMichael have?
You mean total?
Yeah.
45.
The listeners at home, you have your guesses written down in your head. The number is, according to Cage Match, 159.
Oh my.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
Off track.
And house shows. He did a lot of house shows. His last match, get this. I love looking at random stuff like this. His last match was a WCW house show in March 1999 at the Stabler Arena in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Steve McMichael, Dean Malenko, and Chris Benoit defeated Barry Windham, Kurt Hennig, and Wrath in a trios match on that show. Can you believe that? Oh my
God. I mean, at least on one end you have the Horsemen, right? Or Horsemen adjacent.
Yeah.
And then
amazing. That's tremendous.
I would have loved to see that. Actually.
Oh my God. It's on a tape somewhere. I'm sure it is. All right, let's go to WWE, because they had a lot of big news this month. And we had Backlash, which saw John Cena, the newly heel, of course, John Cena, defending his first title defense in his reign after winning at WrestleMania, defeating Randy Orton. He also attacked R-Truth at a press conference after, press conference in air quotes. Drew McIntyre was hurt in this match on a spot. Jeff Cobb made his WWE debut. His new name would be JC Mateo. And Gunther defeated Pat McAfee on this show as well. We also had WrestleMania 42, officially no longer taking place in New Orleans. Poor them. Las Vegas was set to be the front runner. Of course, this would not be announced until the month after. WWE was, story came out there, planning to have Las Vegas host WrestleMania, quote unquote, frequently. TKO seems to like that. Triple H confirmed that New Orleans would host Money in the Bank in 2026 and WrestleMania, quote unquote, at a future date. We'll see if that ever happens. Ever. Saturday night's main event also took place during this month. John Cena took on R-Truth.
John Truth, though.
John Truth. I like the R Cena.
John Truth, yeah. I don't hate that. Against R Cena.
The big news of this, of course, the match was not good, memorable. The big news was Cody Rhodes returning after this. Of course, the first appearance since losing a title at WrestleMania, issued a challenge for Money in the Bank, which would turn out to be John Cena and Logan Paul against Cody Rhodes and Jey Uso. R-Truth and I have been involved in that. Chelsea Green was injured on this show. And Bronson Reed made his return after ankle surgery, I believe, or some sort of injury jumping off the top rope. And also aligned with Paul Heyman as the Vision grew. Before we get to the next topic or the cuts and things like that, thoughts about any of that sticks out to you?
I mean, especially in things that I'm mostly involved in, it was, interesting to see Jeff Cobb, head on over to WWE. When I say interesting, I don't mean it in a derogatory sense. It was legitimately interesting. I mean, good for him, right? Like, this is a guy that in Japan had done pretty much everything in New Japan, you know, and had clearly been slotted in this mid-card area where, you know, TV title, the never title, like, you know, that was his ceiling in the company. He had absolutely hit it. And it was clearly time for him to move on and do something else. And good for him if he got an offer from WWE, who are, you know, have a thing for Pacific Islanders these days. So if he was in a position to be able to benefit from it, all the more power to him. I gotta admit, I don't watch WWE anymore outside of people, certain events happening, maybe people saying, oh, this match, this whatever, I'll pick up some clips and whatnot. I'm gonna tell you, not a lot of people talking about old JC Mateo and his accomplishments within the squared circle since. But I know he's mostly there. I know he's been doing a lot of the heater thing with
Hikaleo,
with the Bloodline. Yeah, yes, with yeah. Exactly. So, it's a good role for him nonetheless. I think a couple of us were surprised because he was really, he lived in Japan. He, his family, yes, kids. I think some of us were surprised that he decided to uproot everyone.
Yeah.
And take him to the U.S. But, look, if the money's good, brother, you go where the money is. I don't have an issue with him on that front. The John Cena R-Truth stuff, man, that, that wasn't good. That was one of the things that I did get to lay my eyes on, and that stunk. I mean, there's no really other way to go about it. It just really was not good, and then would eventually lead to R-Truth having a heel turn. Is this the beginning of the mess? Is this the beginning of the mess?
Yes, and then June, right. The mess happens, and then gets cleaned up, and then just dissipates. It seems so big at the time. We'll talk about more next episode. But yeah, something seemed so big at the time and just ended up being nothing.
And then, it ended up being absolutely nothing. The New Orleans stuff, right? At this point, I don't even know if it's going to ever go to New Orleans at this point. Mm-hmm. Maybe not under this leadership or ownership, I should say. Maybe not under this ownership, because TKO is going to be very, very... I understand why they're going over and over to Vegas with it. Because that's their home base. That's where they have all their connections. That's where, I guess it's where everything is simpler. They make more money. I don't know what the thing is, but what a trade-off to get, hey, Money in the Bank 2026 instead of WrestleMania. Ooh, boy. Yeah.
And I think part of the story, the big thing is they had a deal and then they just said, no, we're going to change it. And that's the thing. The sentiment that I saw that I agree with the most is if you are a city that is making a deal, I think Indianapolis also has a deal for WrestleMania at some point as well. It's like, there has to be concern of why couldn't this happen to us? Right. If you're one of these small and you're putting up money and all that, that's kind of one of the things that, that it just punishes fans in that city and people traveling and punishes the city itself. But you have to be able to trust a business partner. If they're bringing a huge event, unless there's a terrorist concern or something like something, or a catastrophe.
Something huge, a disaster. Yeah.
Then you move it where people understand it. Just because you're like, I think we might want to go back here. That's just not cool. It's just not good. And I understand the business is business, but not with this stuff. And that one other sentiment I saw, and you can't really, we have to separate Vince McMahon, the businessman, from all the other things. We'll talk about that in a minute. But Vince McMahon, one of the sentiments I also saw, I agree, is Vince wouldn't have done this. Right. No. And that for better or for worse, there are certain things that he was not going to pull the rug out from someplace and say, when it came to WrestleMania, those partnerships and that mattered to him. And this was a sign of many signs of this was really the TKO era where they're just like, well, we'll make it up to you. There's no guarantee they're ever going to make it up to him. And I don't know how
there's no guarantee
how some of these cities can trust him again. So I don't know.
And wasn't it the mayor of Boston? I think maybe a couple of months ago there were rumors that they had been approached by TKO to do business there. And the mayor was, I think it was Boston. And the mayor outright said, nah.
I think maybe it was the site fee for the final John Cena match. because
I think, okay, that was it.
Originally, yes. And I don't know if it's this episode or the next one. So there's essentially John Cena Sr., one of the great talkers. He'll tell anyone anything at any time. He said that essentially that Cena's last match, to a local news station in Boston, he said that the last match is going to be in Boston at the TD Garden. And that certainly was not the case. As we know, it's going to be Washington, D.C. But yeah, there was a story out there that essentially that TKO wanted a site fee for this. And TD Garden was like, no, or there were like, city was like, we're not going to do that. And that's when some of these cities, like it is, they don't live and breathe this like we do. And it's a question of, okay, we can do it. Like, why would we pay extra for this? At some point, I think the site fee thing is going to be interesting with some of these bigger cities. Like, they always talk about WrestleMania in London. And London doesn't need a big event there. The mayor wants it badly. But I don't think they're all of a sudden going to be like, we're going to pay to bring it here. Because London's one of the biggest tourist cities in the world. Like, why would they pay extra for people that are already going to come there anyway? So it's just, I think for some of the big cities, it's going to be, I think some of your, not say your A cities, but your next level kind of B cities that have some money, they're like, we need to attract people here. Where I think you need a site fee. You're like, we want to get this. That's where they're going to live. But some of these bigger cities aren't going to be like, New York City is not going to say, we need to attract more people here. You know what I mean?
I don't think so. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, okay. So I kind of misremembered, but I knew something was up here. And look, I mean, your point is spot on, and maybe even amplified by the idea, well, they can pull the rug from under us at any given moment. Like, these contracts that they have are probably heavily skewed in their favor too. So, but look, we're speculating, we don't know, but yeah.
So the other kind of big note I had from this month before we go in some of the other headlines, this is a month of a lot of cuts. And this was one where it wasn't just all NXT names or, you know, names that they've been training there, just hadn't got a lot of TV time. This is a big mix, both on the main roster and on the NXT side as well. You had Shayna Baszler, Cora Jade, Braun Strowman, Dakota Kai, Bea Priestley, Shotzi Blackheart, Gallus, Javier Bernal, Ora Mensa, Brian Popola, who is a host of The Bump, I believe. Also did some other stuff for them. Katana Chance, Caden Carter, Jakara Jackson. A lot of alliteration, it seems like. Eddie Thorpe, Gigi Dolan, and Riley Osborne, who revealed later he was injured when he got the call that he was being cut. And so, you know, you're talking about, as I mentioned during the AEW section, about releases and things like this. I always find it fascinating, especially with the big WWE cuts, you really kind of find out who really wants this, right? Who's willing to get out on the indies, like the Bear Bronson type, and grind and say, I'm going to hit the reset button, and I'm going to change my look, my name. I want to get out there, and I want to wrestle because I really love this. And I think, you know, some of the people they bring in, they're bringing in, you know, college athletes and things like that. Unless they've always really wanted to do this, this is a means to an end. And some of these talents on here had wrestled other places. Some people have gone back. Some people have not got picked up anywhere. You've seen some people. I'm always fascinated a couple months later, who is back in the scene. And a lot of these people just are not. And I don't know if it's a case of, you know, if you look at the indies, it's money is always an issue with promoters. How much you paying to bring in? If you bring some of these people in, are they going to make that difference up in sales? That's a tough thing, especially when you're talking about some people aren't featured. It's a, when a lot of these talents hit the market at the same time, you're saying, okay, I can pick. It's almost like, you know, the old, you know, the Chinese menu thing of, I'm going to take this order and this and this and this. Are they looking to be like, okay, add these five women, who's going to make an impact for me, right? And it's it's fascinating to see who's going to get out there and hustle, who's going to get out there and try to do the thing. Like, add this group, Dakota Kai, I've not heard from at all. Braun Strowman is doing a TV show. Cora Jade tried GCW, and I think she's done for a while. Baszler's done a couple things off and on, but no interest. And a lot of these people haven't really got any looks at AEW. Like, Ora Mensa got some Ring of Honor dates. Let's see. Who's I just talked? Caden Carter. Caden Carter, yes. Lacey Lane, got the alliteration. I was going to do her JC Jane and NXT, but she, alliteration, man, it screws me up every time. But she got that appearance, that big spot against Mercedes Moné. And that was a tough spot for her because people were expecting like a name, and then and then someone from Florida's like, oh, who could it be? And then she came out, and she had been on Ring of Honor against Mia Shirakawa, but people didn't see it as a name, and I think that kind of hurt from the go. Gigi is back on the indies. Shotzi has really been the one that's like out there doing GCW dates.
Yes,
and doing
she's
indie
the one
dates.
That's really been working.
And she's like, I'm back in the mix. So it's, I think B has been doing some stuff, I think back in Stardom, I think, or at least in
she
Japan.
Has.
Yeah, so it, but in terms of just all these people, you know, AEW showing interest and so on, I'm always fascinated to see kind of what happens months afterward, after the non-competes are up, who goes where. And there was some speculation Dakota maybe AEW bound because Mercedes likes her and all that, but I mean, we're here in November, no hide or hair of her. So yeah, I'm always fascinated by these things.
Yeah, and you've got Eddie Thorpe as well. He's done a couple of indie dates. You know, he's wrestled his old pal Gabe Kidd. I think it was in Prestige. Was it? It was one of the West Coast promotions. I don't remember if it was West Coast or if it was Prestige. It's always interesting to see, like you said, who's going to hit the ground running again. And then you see, well, like Shayna Baszler, I don't think at this stage, you know, she's up there in age as well. I think she's going to hang around and make sure not to do any faux pas and hopefully, you know, secure a job as a trainer. I think that's what she's even publicly talked about that, about wanting to be a trainer at the Performance Center. That would ultimately be what she'd want. Braun Strowman, his TV show apparently did really well for the network it was on.
USA. It's on USA.
USA. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I couldn't remember. So good for him. And I mean, look, I'm not surprised with Braun either. I think in that type of environment, I didn't watch the show, obviously, because I didn't remember what's on USA. But, you know, I'm not surprised. Like, he's a big personable guy, you know, so I think he probably fit quite well in the role of a guy who just goes around and eats a lot of food and talks about his enthusiasm for food and the people around. I'm sure he's very good at it. He's a personable guy. I think that probably worked out well for him, and he's probably ready to move away from that. Katana Chance, didn't I hear that she was going to do things for the new American Ninja stuff?
Yeah, she's going to be a coach because she's going. Yeah, she originally came from that world and is going back. So that's fascinating too. And seeing some people that go back to where they are, they're like, "I'm good. I'm good with the sideshow.
Exactly.
I'm good." Right? Yeah, it's a whole thing. All right. Yeah, go ahead.
And you know, just real quick, and then the Priscilla Kelly, Gigi Dolan. You know, she's been out there a little bit, maybe not as hard as Shotzi, but she's also said, hey, I've got some unfinished business with AEW too. Like, she's outright said, I'd probably like to go back. And look, we'll see how it goes, because, the AEW women's division has changed tremendously over the past couple of years. I think it's, you'll always hear this, you know, it's a bit of a trope. It's a cliche. I don't think that the women's division has ever been better than it is right now. But I really do believe like it is. AEW's women's division is at a very high level. Like, not only is it better than it's ever been, I think the level is extremely high when you consider the upper tier of the division. Mm-hmm. Can Gigi find a spot in there is my question. And they'll give her a shot if they want to try her out again.
Yeah. And there's always Ring of Honor
and there's always Ring of Honor.
I could go on for an hour on what Ring of Honor should be and how it best serve, but we have to move on to more headlines.
Okay.
That has to be for a different day. Zelina Vega. We'll go with this first chunk. Zelina Vega paying tribute to her late father. After her first WWE singles title win, she brought the belt to the 9/11 Museum as he died during that. Zoe Stark suffered an injury during Raw, out of action with a torn MCL, ACL, meniscus, so injury prone. Tough break for her, but she is, actually, as we talk, she said she's on the road to recovery and doing motion work and starting to get there. SmackDown, 2 or 3 hour debate. Reportedly remaining at 3 hours for the foreseeable future. And there was more talk about when they would move to two. Of course, I would we'd learn more about that in June. Company touted the signing of three Olympians, which are two judo players and one discus thrower. Exactly what we want in the business, right? Discus throwers make for good wrestlers. Liv Morgan landed a role in the Bad Lieutenant Tokyo movie. The company's percentage of AAA was revealed, 51%, so a controlling interest, not 100%, with the other 49% going to Philippe, which was a Mexican-based sports and entertainment company. WWE Evolution, Saturday night's main event, and the Great American Bash were set for when? July 12th. Yes, July 12th weekend. Wow. What else happened during July 12th weekend? Do you remember?
Was it your mother's birthday, Josh?
No, it was not. No. That is in May, I believe. All In, AW All In weekend in Arlington, Texas.
Coincidence.
Man, they must have not looked at the calendar. So strange. Oh. However, they did make sure to revive the Edge trademark application. Can't let it go. NXT wrestler Brinley Reese underwent shoulder surgery. Charlotte Flair attend the NBA playoffs with Alex Rodriguez. Yes, we feel like we're in a People magazine section of the headlines right now. Eric gave an update on his wife Valhalla's return to WTV after she had, I believe, her second child. She said she was thinking about a comeback. Spoiler alert, in June, she would get released. CM Punk appeared in the trailer for the sci-fi series Revival. The official name for the PLE set for October, Crown Jewel Perth. Creative writing executive Christine Lubrano was gone from the company. John Cena, he appeared on TNT, Warren, except it's on Inside the NBA, not AEW Collision or the like. El Grande Americano defeated Dragon Lee to become the speed champion. A judge, they'll go into some legal stuff and otherwise with Vince McMahon. This is the Vince McMahon section. A judge approved Janelle Grant's request to amend the lawsuit against McMahon and WWE. They voluntarily dismissed claims against John Laurinaitis, which made people think that he was flipping to their side. Johnny Ace, always a self-preservationist. John Cena said he was not surprised by the fan reaction to him saying he loves Vince McMahon. The new sports and entertainment company that Vince McMahon started, 14th and I, the name was revealed. The doctor, Carl Coker, in the Vince McMahon versus Jell Krant case, filed a defamation suit against a lawyer, that whole muddled mess. The company crowned their first ever Evolve Women's Champion. And also, we had some Money in the Bank qualifiers. Becky Lynch against Lyra Valkyrie was set for Money in the Bank. That was official during May. Thoughts about any of that?
Boy, oh boy. Well, okay. So John Cena is not surprised by the fan reaction saying that he loves Vince McMahon. This is what I found fascinating. This is a guy who had to apologize, make a video apology to the country of China, right? For his...
Yes.
For his...
The mention of Taiwan, right? The mention of Taiwan. Taiwan is a country, and then he had to apologize.
Exactly. And he had to apologize for that. And yet, here we go with Vince McMahon, who is currently accused of horrendous things and has a storied background of lots of tales that, you know, go hand in hand with what's going on in the General Grant lawsuit, that people essentially go, "Wow, I'm not really surprised." And he goes like, "Well, you know, people are mad. What do you want from me?" You know, it's like people are angry that I still love Vince. And like, I don't know, like I don't necessarily want to turn this into like give it a turn and make it a little darker than what it should be, what this show should be. But like, I think there would be a way for John Cena to publicly, or John Cena or anyone really, to publicly like address the Vince McMahon things by saying, you know, look, Vince McMahon has done everything for my career. If it wasn't for him, I would be nothing, right? I understand that John feels a kind of way in regards to Vince because, yeah, I mean, Vince put his entire trust behind him, had to make movies, you know, the Marine stuff and all of that, and that led him to the career that he has today. I think there is nonetheless a way, even though you feel like you owe someone, is that, look, I owe this person everything, but what's happening here is, you know, wrong and disgusting, and I can't associate with that. Like, I think both can coexist.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't think you necessarily have to, especially when you just be creating a false narrative around your past, whereas to say, you know, Vince McMahon meant nothing to me. Like, don't go that far. Then it becomes posturing. Then it clearly becomes performative. I think both are possible. I mean, you know, the world we live in is a lot less black and white than a lot of people enjoy let on. Let's put it that way. You know, it's some nuance here is possible. And I think it's, you know, I think it's normal to be in this type of situation where someone you knew, like you probably have a friend, you know, someone at least in your past where you, that did something very weird. I mean, I'm not saying anything criminal, but something weird where you're like, yeah, you know what? I used to really love hanging out with Fred, but you know, he made out with my ex-wife, so I don't really see Fred anymore. You know, like, it's okay to say we used to be friends, Fred and I, and we had some great times, but now he kind of stinks, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that's possible.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I should mention that Callie Armstrong was the woman that became the first ever Evolve Women's Champion. I think of this headline I saw on Fightful, and look, Fightful is really good at stuff and breaking stories. They had a story that somebody within WWE saw her as a future WrestleMania main eventer. And
yes,
and it's possible. It's just, it just came out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. Of like, they're trying too hard. If that someone really did say that, like, anyone can say anything, you know, and it's mm-hmm. possible, but she became the champion, and I don't think she's on the NXT roster yet. I don't know. I saw this and I'm like, oh, okay. But nothing has happened since then. I don't know. It just was one of the things that always stuck as like odd to me for whatever reason, but who knows? Years from now, she could be in the main event and WrestleMania and I'll look stupid, but it's all that. Okay. Let's go through a second chunk of stuff to wrap up WWE. Javon Evans and Ethan Page, of course, of NXT, appeared on SmackDown. Stephanie Vaquer officially joined the Raw roster, was set to compete in a Money in the Bank qualifier. Goldberg hinted at a WWE retirement match location, that being, of course, Atlanta. Goldberg said his son Gage would walk him out for the retirement match. The company entered a multi-year partnership with Seagram's. Freedom Ramsey announced his departure from the WWE ID program. I believe he was the first one to do that. More on, mm-hmm. of course, that throughout the year. Rick Derringer, singer of Hulk Hogan's Rick Real America, and I believe Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo, passed away at 77 years old. Cody Rhodes, what do you want to talk about? The podcast premiered in May, of course, as part of the new deal with Fanatics. Big, big surprise. Brandi Rhodes, his first guest. If you ever need a first guest for a podcast, just bring on your spouse. It seems to be all the rage with these WWE podcasts. It happens all the time. Dani Palmer announced her departure from WWE. Bianca Belair was set to return as on SmackDown. Of course, she missed essentially almost the entire year to this point with a broken knuckle in her hand. So she made an appearance there, but not wrestling. Almost said he's patiently waiting for his return to the company. Of course, remember, he started out the year winning the GHC tag team titles in Pro Wrestling Noah, and then was he dropped them like 3 days later and was called back to the States to do nothing. Roman Reigns set for talks to be in the live-action Street Fighter film. The Rock was announced to be starring in a future psychological thriller called Breakthrough. Tyrese Halliburton of the Indiana Pacers was coming to WWE 2K25 as part of their Dunk and Destruction DLC packs. The company has announced expect to sign two European wrestlers following recent tryouts. Translated in English, the White Eagle. I worked on this pronunciation, and I'm going to screw up. Ajay Blanc. I'm totally screwing that. It's the A-I-G-L-E.
It's Aigle.
Aigle. Aigle Blanc. And Mike DeVecchio. They would actually, mm-hmm. that would happen later on in the year. Actually, I believe October was when they got confirmed. Titus O'Neil, remember him, was set to star in a Bravo dating series, King's Court.
Jesus Christ.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
This was on the Observer. This is what you pulled up. Like, this was part of. This was on the site.
Yes, we're talking about it here. Yes, and so the only I didn't write this, and I don't remember this. I only know this because I was flipping on Peacock one day, and I'm like, "Is that Titus O'Neil?" And I'm like, "Holy shit, it is Titus O'Neil! What is he doing on this show?" I had no idea. No idea. Becky Lynch said Hulk Hogan memes compare her to the scummiest person on earth. I don't know what meme she was talking about, but whatever. A lot of unfortunate Becky Lynch social commentary, social media commentary throughout the year. Chelsea Green signed a new multi-year deal with WWE. Big E announced his engagement to Chris Yim, not Mia Yim, Chris Yim. Alexa Bliss made her return to SmackDown after 2 months off. Kairi Sane made her return to Raw after 5 months off. The company announced that Night of Champions was going to be set for Saudi Arabia. As I was mentioning earlier, at this point, we thought we knew the location and date for the final John Cena match, Boston, December. A big old knot on that one. Everything in the menu with Braun Strowman, you talked about earlier, was announced to be premiering on USA in the fall. And, of course, then it got released that same month. Julia officially joined the SmackDown roster. Hulk Hogan underwent neck fusion surgery. The Miz was set to host the American Gladiators reboot on Amazon. The company filed for King of the Luchadors, trademark they have not used it to this point. Carl Anderson revealed he had been more than 500 days sober. I don't know why I put this in the WWE section. This should have been the junk drawer, but whatever. And also, I'll just throw this one in here too, because he used to be in WWE. Duke the Dumpster Drosy was indicted on attempted aggravated sexual exploitation of a minor. Jesus, these weren't even in the WWE things that happened, but they're in there now. Thoughts about any of that?
Look, we're going to skip the dumpster Drosy, where is exactly where he belongs. Toss him in the bin. Exciting stuff. The Becky Lynch stuff. I think the meme is just people started calling her Becky Hogan. I think that was the thing, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Because somehow they believe that she had complete creative control over everything she did, and wouldn't put anyone over and whatnot. You know, Josh, we are of a certain age, you and I. I feel like I really feel like modern fans have forgotten what pushes look like. What a star is supposed to look like and how they're pushed, and it suddenly becomes like a thing where if they win too much or they go over, then it's like, oh, to the detriment of everyone else. Now we're burying people. No, we're not burying people. We're actually making stars. We're actually making sure that you understand that this person here that is winning a lot of matches and is, has a bit of the run of the place is someone you should be paying attention to. You need to either rally behind or hate this person, depending on what side of the fence they're sitting, and just go along with the ride. We see that it's not just a WWE thing. I think it's generalized. Sometimes it's like, I feel like 2 decades or so of Vince McMahon's singular vision of professional wrestling booking has transformed a lot of minds into believing that, well, everyone gets a turn, everyone gets a turn with a title. Everyone gets a turn with a nice little pushy push, And when it comes to creating some stars, when it comes to creating the backbones of your company, then people have it. They pull the trigger on disliking the person a lot quicker because suddenly it's like, oh, well, they're destroying the competition. They're not putting anyone over. They have this set of rules or commandments that a pushed wrestler needs to follow. Otherwise they're just looking out for themselves. It's just it's an ego thing. Ergo, they're Hogan-esque. And I think that's what happened with Becky. Cause they were making her return a big deal. What do you want from me? It made sense. And I didn't get upset, but people got really, really upset. I don't know.
It happens. It happens at pro wrestling,
Yeah, it does. Who's Danny Palmer?
I can't remember. It's just different headlines. I always get the releases in there and all that stuff. So yeah.
I'm like, who's Danny Palmer? I legitimately don't know who that person is. And the big debuts, but let's talk about something maybe a little more positive. The big debuts of two of the big women stars that WWE signed last year. Stephanie Vaquer and Julia or over the course of the past year. Two big names that a lot of people considered were swept under that were nabbed right under the nose of AEW, right? Well, we know WWE nabbed Vicaire from AEW. We know that. Julia, not quite as sure. But I mean, it's crazy because both of them came in with a lot of hype. I would say a lot of expectations.
Yeah.
And really one of them is delivering, right? Wouldn't you say Vicaire. Stephanie Vicaire?
Yeah, you hear it. Right? I think about when I think of Julia, because I don't watch a lot of Japanese wrestling, but I listen, I know kind of what the buzz is, and people are like super into her. I mean, Dave was over the moon for her. He's like, these matches are just unbelievable. And yeah, when she, Vicaire signed, and then when Julia signed, it's like, okay, they're really kind of setting some things up, and you know, they made the move to get these women. When I see kind of just, I think how they both got introduced, I'm just a big fan of, if you really think you have something, wait to call them up or debut them and make it seem like a huge deal when they're there.
Sure.
And I believe Julia, I think she just appeared like in a background or like a backstage promo or like it didn't seem like a big, like, holy shit, here she is, the Raw after WrestleMania type thing. That's that when thing like, this is someone new and this is someone that we should pay attention to. Vicaire, they seem to have really got behind. And with Julia, it just doesn't, for all the hype kind of coming in and all this that the people really are into the in-ring were super into, it just haven't seemed to have that same thing with her. And I don't know why that is.
I have a theory. So the Julia that I knew, which was essentially on the Japanese side of things, she had an aura about her because she came across as dangerous. Because, you know, she would throw some shoot punches and some shoot headbutts. Like, that's mostly what we
Who among us hasn't, right? I mean,
yeah. So, you know, you come over here to North America, to the US, to WWE specifically, and you're told, hey, you got to tone all of this stuff down now. You're not going to be throwing shoot headbutts on the NIL kids, okay? You know what? Like, this is not what we're going to be doing here.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that there's a lot of the aura of danger that came with Julia has just is gone, and that's what made Julia special. That's why I think guys like Dave and myself were like, holy smokes, this Julia, she's bonkers. She's nuts. You know, she's just, at some point she'll just get pissed off in the ring and she'll start throwing hands like for real. You know, there was that aura of danger, of unpredictability with her, but that disappears in a company that doesn't allow for danger and unpredictability. Everything has to be scripted and follows, you have to follow this path here, and most importantly you have to work the house style, which happens to be a lot safer than the way Julia used to work. So I think that so I can understand WWE fans who see her, saw her in NXT and in on the main roster going, I don't understand the big deal with this woman. I don't get it. What's special about this wrestler? Why was everyone freaking out when she got signed and were excited? I don't see it. I don't blame them, because I think what made her special was taken away from her. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's something where you eventually find out with the talent, when it comes contract time, what are they interested in doing? Right. Are they like, I want to be in WWE and I'm fine with this? Or are they like, wrestlers are artists, you know, and they're like, I have a certain palette that I like to paint from or do whatever. And I'm not feeling that creative thing. Right. And it's time to go somewhere and kind of remind people what they forgot about. And that's when you kind of really know, it's that thing of, are they a wrestler or a sports entertainer? Right. And exactly. what do I want to do? So with her, there's a long way to go, but that'll be interesting to see. I think with both, you know, the big brands and so on, what do they want to do? What do they want to be known for? And she's young enough where she can go back out, you know, and say, okay, y'all must have forgot. And I'm sure Tony Khan would be interested. I'm sure New Japan, like, I'm sure she can go back out there and get back what she had and remind people, and AEW fans especially, because a lot of them followed her along, would be like, okay, you know. So these are people I'm always interested in kind of seeing what do they want to be? And especially if that buzz, you know, she starts working like main event matches, that's where you're kind of like, oh boy, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That becomes a little problematic. Look at it's the Shinsuke Nakamura rule, right? Where it's like, yep. You know, are you interested in being the guy who had that aura, who felt special, who felt larger than life, and who could wrestle a damn good match? Or are you comfortable just being benched for 18 months at a time?
Yeah.
And then
collecting
out
the check
of mothballs.
And, yeah. Yeah. Collecting
pulled
the
out
check,
of mothballs
surfing,
for 3 months and then sent back to the closet.
Yeah.
And Shinsuke seems to be fine with it. You know, he's collecting his check. He's doing what he's doing.
And I think that run, when he first came to NXT, that was his like the real like this is worth paying attention to run. When he first came out, and that match against Sami Zayn and the intro and things like that, people were watching just like that. That was just like the real NXT of like this is really fun and this is really meaningful and worth your time. And that was the Shinsuke Nakamura that people like, this is the shit right here, right? And then to what's kind of happened to now. And the main roster just is never, it's never, they just never really got behind it as much as they could have. He's had dalliances, but never like, he's never felt like, okay, this is the run, you know?
Yeah, like when he came in, when he started on main, right? He had this really good push when he started on main, right? Because he won the Royal Rumble, right? Didn't he win that year? I could be mistaken. Sure. Because when he came in, when he came up from NXT, like he got a solid year's push, and he had, you know, he had the big entrance and the great theme song. He had, they even had the guy play the violin, play him in on some of his matches. You know, it's like for a minute you're like, oh, okay, they understand Shinsuke Nakamura, they know what to do with him. And then eventually it's sort of all petered away and they never returned to that. I might come to think of it, I think I got mixed up with Asuka when I said winning the Royal Rumble, because Asuka came in, won the Royal Rumble.
And right.
She came up and had a tear, but Shinsuke had a great start to his main roster career and it just like fizzled out. I don't know.
Yeah, he worked his first main roster appearances, he worked a lot with Dolph Ziggler in dark matches. And then it's like house show. He did a 205 live dark match against Dolph Ziggler. What was his main roster debut? Wow. He teamed
with famous cruiserweight Dolph Ziggler, right? Yes.
His main roster TV debut was a team with AJ Styles against Dolph Ziggler and Kevin Owens. That was in May 2017. So yeah, that was kind of his intro in, was aligning with that. So yeah, so long ago. I don't remember anything about that. A lot of house shows. A lot of Dolph Ziggler going back in that run as I'm looking back at this.
I don't remember. That I really don't remember.
He probably doesn't either. All right. And so this is historic, Warren, because I'm combining NXT, AAA, and TNA all into one section. Because as I'm going through these headlines, I started doing this a little bit in April. It is really hard to dissect what is what. So this is the debut of the NXT TNA section of things. So this will combine all three of them. Ace Austin, Savannah Evans departed TNA as their contracts came to an end. Some TNA Under Siege notes, that event took place. Spitfire, the tag team disbanded as they lost a match. Danny Luna and Jody Threat. Cody Deaner lost his contract in a match, or he would return under a mask as a hometown man months later. Raj Singh filled in for Ace Austin as he had to miss the show. The former Alicia Fox made her TNA in-ring debut. Tessa Blanchard was pulled from a TNA taping and also a subsequent border brawl, kind of like an indie event TNA produced but didn't really do much with due to an injury she suffered at Under Siege. TNA president Carlos Silva had to clarify there was a story that they had banned blood at this very violent Steve Macklin match. And so he said, no, there's no blood banned, but talent are encouraged to use extreme violence more sparingly. They were on a run. I think they had back-to-back events or TV. I think they had an Eric Young. I think it was Eric Young versus Steve Macklin. They just bleeding buckets.
That's the one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The company announced their co-produced this Border Brawl event featuring XWB talent. And again, it was this big US versus Canada thing to really kind of play into that, which it's kind of dumb. Matt Hardy on that show. I mean, it's just like this line, but just some of the stuff. It's just like, oh my God, like what do we have to keep doing this? Indy Hartwell made her in-ring debut on the show for TNA. The company announced two signings for the Knockouts division to indie wrestlers who are finally starting to get a little bit of TV run now. On the AAA side, four TNA champions were confirmed for Triple Mania Regia. Elijah made a surprise appearance on NXT. Angel Umberto and the Hardys and Joe Hendry also expected at that Triple Mania show. They announced that Worlds Collide would stream on YouTube, and they announced the first match, which was El Hijo del Vikingo defending the title or taking on Chad Gable. And also in the graphics, they ended up spoiling the mega tremendous title match result, which is just showed they just didn't really care. And basically they're like, yeah, Alberto Del Rio is losing this title, just to let you know. Mm-hmm. Trick Williams won the TNA world title at NXT Battleground. The NXT Great American Bash venue was confirmed, and they also confirmed that they were running it the same afternoon, head-to-head with All In. Ethan Page won the North American title. JC Jane won the NXT Women's title. There's a report, and later confirmed that company was returning to the former ECW arena a few weeks ahead of the AEW residency that was coming up. The winners were announced for season one of WLFG. They announced a premiere date for LFG season two. And Mike Santana appeared at NXT Battleground and also made his NXT debut as well that month. Thoughts about any of that?
Good for Mike Santana. Honestly, let's, you know, we got to throw some flowers to this guy, a guy, the tag team dude. No one, you know, felt like he was undervalued in AEW, didn't want to do, couldn't get along with Ortiz anymore. AEW clearly didn't see any value in him. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to go do something else. I'm going to go make a name for myself. I believe in myself. I can make this happen. And good for him. Like, legitimately good for him. Because at this point in November, a lot of stuff has happened. But nonetheless, like, it really did work out for him. You know, if the arrows continue to point where we believe they are pointing, he might have left at the perfect time and entered TNA at the perfect time to eventually end up as a member of the WWE roster and make a ton of money. And good for him. Like he's the very definition of betting on yourself, right? That's the very, that's it's textbook where everyone is telling you, no, you should stay in your tag team. You know, you're not a main eventer or whatever the fuck, right?
Yeah.
And then he's like, no, I'm going to prove all of you wrong. And he goes out and he has this singular mindset and he does it. Now, will the booking continue to be favorable in his endeavors wherever he goes? That's another question that we can, that your November guests will be able to ponder over. But, right up until this point, Mike Santana's departure from AEW was the best move of his career.
Yeah.
It's really the best move of his career.
They really should have put the titles on those guys while they're in AEW. Just a 6 month run or something like that. It would have been, anyone that's seen them live, and I've seen them live, but also in those, they were just really tight as a unit and people really get into them and they just never really get that push that the title push that they should have.
I think people forget how over Santana and Ortiz were.
Yeah.
And plus they had the smart fans support. Like, the smart fans love these dudes. They were saying, waste of time in TNA, get out of there. Stop doing your goofy skits with Conan and whatnot. And then they show up in AEW. People lose their minds. They're like, this is fantastic. What a great signing. They should have been tag team champions out the gate, quite frankly. And never mind SCU. You know, like, these were the guys that you should have planted the titles on from the get-go. Like, people seem to forget just how much fan support Santana and Ortiz had back in the day. They were a huge, huge get at the time.
Yep. And the winners of season one of LFG, I should have mentioned Jasper Troy and Tyra May Steele, which are both firmly on the NXT roster. Let's go to Japan. In the month in Japan, a lot of New Japan news here. Zack Sabre Jr. versus Roki Goto, a IWGP World Title match was confirmed for Resurgence, which would be that month. We had Tetsuya Naito wrestling his final match for New Japan Pro Wrestling, at least under this contract. Still has not returned at this point. At Wrestling Dontaku, he's also set later that month to undergo eye surgery. and stem cell treatment for his knee. So his run with the company coming to an end, which a lot of people did not expect, but definitely is a thing that happened. Daisuke Sakamoto taken to the hospital after an injury suffered at a Big Japan show. Mayu Iwatani joined Marigold after departing Stardom. An IWGP World Title match and two other matches to confirm were in New Japan Dominion. The company held wrestling again, Dontaku, Resurgence, and Best of the Super Junior shows as well that would conclude in June. At Resurgence, the Good Brothers made their return, teaming with the Young Bucks. Bea Priestley, we mentioned her earlier, made a surprise debut. One of the more strange title changes of the year, given where we're at now, Mercedes Moné lost the strong women's title to Izumi, which we're not really sure still why that happened, given she's the belt collector and all that, the business relationship and whatever. Then TJP and Templari won the New Japan Strong Tag Team titles from the World Class Wrecking Crew. And New Japan announced tag team titles are coming for their Tamashii. Did I pronounce that correctly? Do you know?
I think so. I'm not quite sure because I never watch the New Zealand brand.
Yes, they're Oceania-based region. Thoughts about any of that?
It's such a wild idea we're introducing tag team titles for the show that, you know, is put on in a gymnasium somewhere where literally no one shows up, like literally no one goes to. I like the biggest news, obviously, for New Japan fans at the time, Japanese wrestling fans, was Tetsuya Naito just announcing that he's done with New Japan, and there will not be any contract renewals and he's going away. And you know, the way things are handled oftentimes with Naito is like, you're never quite sure if he's telling the truth. He's a great worker. You know, he's going to talk, let's say, to Tokyo Sports, and he's going to say some bullshit. Sometimes he's going to work an angle. So people are like, he's not leaving. Tetsuya Naito is not leaving. But no, he left and he took Bushi with him. The guy has been broken down for a while. Like, he is one of these, he's a guy who has been in a really rough shape for a while, and they being New Japan, were way too dependent still on him. I get it. He's a massive draw. People love him. He sells tons of merch. I understand you want to get as much as you can out of Tetsuya Naito while he's around. I understand that. But there's also a point where his body is absolutely breaking down. He can barely do his finishing move. Mm. You know, in the G1 Will Ospreay had to help him through doing his finishing move on him. And you could hear Will Ospreay say, "Naito-san, one more time, Naito-san," as he's doing it, because he's just a disaster. The guy needed some time off. New Japan never wanted to give him the time off for some reason, but he needed some time off. And maybe all of these surgeries, the stem cells, maybe he'll come back and he'll be a brand new Tetsuya Naito. Where have you been all this time? Or maybe he's like really done. We don't know. His freelance run has been a bust so far. He's had visa issues in Germany. Like, they've been trying to book him there. He went to Rev Pro a couple of times and it's been extremely underwhelming. Like, he's not exactly setting the world on fire with this post New Japan existence right now. But the most important thing that this did, Josh, was truly expose how unprepared New Japan has been for the disappearance of its top guys. Okay, you can point fingers to AEW and say, well, they took Okada and Ospreay from us, and that's fine, right? Okay, these are two guys who could still go, still wrestle. They're not broken down. If your company started depending on that, and then on them being around, and then they leave, well. Okay, I can understand that kind of sucks and it throws a wrench in your plans. But then nonetheless, you kind of figure out, we need to start replacing people, especially considering that our two other top guys, one of them is retiring at the start of 2026 and the other guy's a broken down shell of what he used to be. So we got to start pushing new guys. They had years to push new guys, Josh. It's not as if they don't have the pick of the litter. They have a ton of new guys currently employed on this roster that they have not been pushing, that they've been wishy-washy on for years. And now we're in a position where Hiroshi Tanahashi is about to leave, and all of the guys who supported New Japan through the golden era of the 2010s are all gone. They're all gone. And they've got none of the new guys who have in a position to step up and carry the company into a new era. So fans like myself, a lot of Japanese wrestling fans, have been watching New Japan for 2 years now saying, man, this is so stale. And they are doing nothing. And there's nothing new happening here. They're going back. Last year, we're going back to Naito. Why are we going back to Naito? Why aren't we pushing someone new? Why aren't we doing new things with all of these new guys that you've been telling us? This is the future. These are the guys that we need to be keeping an eye on. Oh, we got Zack Sabre Jr. Zack Sabre Jr. is going to be out the door sooner than later. Like, this is another guy who's going to be leaving New Japan for greener pastures and a bigger paycheck. Like, we just have to be honest with each other at this point. So Naito's departure really shined a light on how barren the main event situation is, how we don't know who the top guys are, who we should be cheering for. No one has been pushed into a position where it's like, yes, this person is going to carry the company. Now, we got Yota Tsuji, clearly, that they're putting a lot of stock in. He's going to be he's going to be at the Tokyo Dome. We don't know if he's main eventing, but, you know, he's going to be against Kanesuke Takeshita for the world title in the Tokyo Dome in January. He seems to be the guy right now that they're going to throw the support behind. And I think he's a good pick. But what are we going to do with the rest of the card? It's really a make it or break it moment right now for New Japan. One that I haven't seen in such a long time. And out of no fault but their own. And they can blame New Japan fans, if you're listening, you can blame AEW and Tony Khan all you want for taking your big stars away and whatnot. But the reality is that your creative side, your booker, everyone working to make interesting things happen in the company, they've all been sitting on their hands and just and not taking any risks, not pushing anyone interesting. This is a problem of New Japan's own making. That's all there is to it. And I really hope that things turn around in 2026 for them.
Perfect. Great way to end the Japan segment. Of course, now we'll go to the junk drawer, the best of everything else that was not above in all the different sections. Sabu, of course, this is the big one. Sabu passing away at 60 years young. Taz and RVD, Taz made it, had a very emotional tribute on Dynamite that was really great, adding some gravity to it again for the fans that remember that era and how important that feud was, and just the alliance and just the whole story with those guys. It was great. It'd be akin, I guess, to, you know, if Raven was to pass away or Tommy Dreamer was to pass away, or the other would talk about them. And just there's certain, for ECW fans, there's certain rivalries and connections that just were just part of that. Obviously, that, you know, the tag team with RVD and Sabu, to have those guys both talk about Sabu and what he meant. And the industry really just kind of blew up in terms of their outpouring of support for Sabu. We learned a lot about wrestlers that said, I would have not gotten into this without him. I learned to change this for him. And I think a lot of that chatter helped get him into the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame this year, for sure. Yes. Joey Janela had to defend the retirement match that he had. He mentioned it almost didn't happen, talked about, you know, some painkillers or something along those lines. I can't remember what the specific ones, was it ketamine or something like that? He had to defend the match. RVD defended GCW and Joey Janela for the criticism over his death. The trailer for the Sabu documentary came out. So, yeah, there was a lot of chatter. And again, some of the negative stuff, I think people just trying to find an issue with GCW, Janela, whatever. But I think Sabu in general, he really got his flowers for this month. And I think it was well deserved. And I had shared some of my memories. I was talking about that. I just remember watching when he made his WWE debut on Raw. and he jumped off the Raw stage above. Mm-hmm. And he talked about it afterwards. His foot slipped. It slipped off one of the letters. So landing wasn't as perfect as he wanted it to be, but that was kind of Sabu, as nothing was perfect. I just remember in that era, just watching, being a fan of ECW, be like, oh my God, this is actually happening. They're in WWE. How is this possible, right? And it was a lot of fun. But I'll kick it over to you for thoughts of Sabu. Let's talk about him if you have some thoughts.
Listen, I unfortunately did not get to see Sabu like in real time when it was happening, because getting ECW up here in French Canada in the early 90s was not possible. So I was a late adopter when it came to Sabu. When things were more easily tradable via the internet. I nonetheless saw a lot of what he had to offer and what he produced. And look, the guy was doing stuff at the time that was just completely unthinkable, that no one had come up with. Like right now, putting people through tables is rote. You know, it's a ho-hum, you know, kind of situation. But yeah, he was doing it when it was still fresh. Like, he was the guy who started, I believe we credit Sabu for doing this, or at least bringing it into the consciousness of wrestling fans, where it's like, oh, okay, guys getting thrown through tables and whatnot. But even outside of that, like, it's what always attracted me to his matches when I started really getting into it and made me want to see more. It's just like this, and it's really hard to explain, but it's that energy that he had, that recklessness, that danger, you know, that we were talking about earlier, you know, in regards to Julia. He had that danger that entire career, where it's like, you never know what this guy was going to do. And then on top of that, when you start reading, when you start reading the sheets on top of that, and you start finding out about how his person, you know, how he is backstage and his personality and whatnot, like, the guy was he was the living embodiment of chaos in pro wrestling on every level. He wasn't a gimmick. What Sabu was in front of the cameras is how he was backstage. It was the complete package. And that's something that really that has always resonated with me when it comes to Sabu. And of course, well, the crazy matches that he had. But again, like, you know, I this is how I lived through Sabu in real time, through the message boards, with people on the ECW boards just going completely ape shit, talking about what he's doing. And I'm sitting there going, oh, that sounds great, click and clack, send, you know. That sounds awesome. But but the effervescence was there. He was a phenomenon. And it's one of these things that if you weren't there, it's really, really hard to translate and completely and make sure that people understand what exactly he meant.
Yeah. I had to watch ECW 1:30 in the morning on my dad got a C-band satellite dish. It was one of those big giant mesh dishes, right?
Right. That you do on the lawn in the backyard,
yes,
type of thing.
Exactly. Yes. Okay. And so he got that, cause we lived far, like, away from anywhere we get cable. He liked TV too. So he's like, I'm going to buy this satellite dish. And I was like, awesome. My world opened up, and I flipped to the back of the, I think it was Orbit magazine, something like that, all the listings for satellite dishes. And there was a sports section in the back. It would say baseball, here's all the games coming up for this week, and so on and so forth. And then there was a wrestling section, and my eyes just like bugged, like cartoon out of my head, like, what? I can get more? And like, not amateur wrestling. Oh, and I'm like, what is Extreme Championship Wrestling? And that was my gateway to it. It was my gateway to Smoky Mountain. That was my gateway to USWA. And I would just record all this stuff. And I was just, that was, as ECW, it was so much different than anything. And anyone that's seen ECW knows that. I mean, they understand how different it was, but to live through that, and the option I had at the time was Raw or Nitro. And then there was this crazy bullshit going on in this small, dim arena in Philadelphia where everyone was going crazy and people with signs and the and weird hat guy at ringside. It just, it was just like, it was nothing, anything I'd ever seen. And Sabu was such a big part of that. And I will never get that era back from a tough to find perspective. And just, you felt like you found it, you know, and just mm-hmm. like, wow, you're part mm-hmm. of this, group. Mm-hmm. And, as air was just, it was so much fun. But yeah, I think about this and just some of these guys, it's tough to see what condition they're in, but you watch those shows, it's not, you know, not hard to believe why they're in that condition that they're in, you know?
No. And you know, the sports medicine back in the day was not as prevalent as it was, it is today.
Let's go through the rest of the month in the junk drawer. Xia Li earned her split decision in her MMA debut. She flipped to that part of the combat sports world. Matt Cardona said he was surprised he hadn't returned to WWE yet. August,
there you go.
Yeah, Josh Barnett's Bloodsport, the next event, was announced for August. Shotzi, we just mentioned her earlier, was teased to appear at MLW Summer of the Beasts in June. Spoiler alert, she would appear on that. Kenta, set to challenge Matt Riddle for the MLW world title. Jenai Kai exited MLW as she became a free agent. Gail Kim had to miss her referee job for Natalya versus Kenzie Page at the NWA Crockett Cup due to illness. Page won that match. This was the beginning of quite a year for Gail Kim, all things considered, a month or so after being let go from TNA. And boy, we'll talk more about Gail Kim later in this series. Billy Jack Haynes, this one's a story I kind of forgot about, was said to unfit to stand trial in his wife's murder and also facing an elder abuse lawsuit following the alleged murder of his wife. Nikki Garcia had to pay a monthly child support to her ex-husband and also gain control of her business trusts as part of their long separation after that whole story. And it happened happening in 2024, of course. Hulk Hogan's Real American Beer, there's a report out that they were looking to acquire the Hooters brand. Quite a year for Hulk Hogan in a lot of ways. We'll get to that later in the year as his final year on this earth. Maple Leaf Pro announced a partnership with Santino Marella's Battle Arts Academy. Deonna Purrazzo, still under Ring of Honor, an AEW contract, of course, was announced to be returning to GCW for three shows. So she finally got some work in. It was kind of this weird dark period. She wasn't working anywhere. Mm-hmm. Carlito, still under WWE contract, returned to the WWC, the World Wrestling Council in Puerto Rico, that same month. Thoughts about any of that?
You know, I checked when I was reading over the notes before starting. I was like, wait, what happened to the Hooters thing with Real American Beer? And it's still ongoing.
Really?
There hasn't been any closure. The last updates are like from mid-summer or late spring, I should say, where they're where basically it's like, well, with the passing of Hulk Hogan, things are kind of on pause for now, you know. But like, they're, from everything I've read, they're still a very, Real American Beer is still a very serious purchaser, potential buyer for the Hooters brand, which is insane. Like for a Canadian like me, nothing spells more America than beer and boobs. So you know, it's like it's a match made in heaven. Yeah, look, I don't have much to add, I don't think, here. It's the Billy Jack Haynes stuff is wild, because this is a guy that I really liked when I was a kid, like, because his heyday was mostly like in the 80s. Like, he did a few, he worked a bit in WWE, like in the 80s, and I had his LJN rubber guy.
I think I might have it in the closet. Yeah.
Because I like this guy, you know, it's just crazy where, you know, what happens and what these people turn out to be in reality, as opposed to what you remember them as children. It's like, it's the kind of thing, like, even look, I'm 50 years old and this kind of stuff still happens, where it's just like, world is shattered. It's like, oh my goodness. Okay. The Billy Jack Haynes piece of shit. All right. Okay. Well, let's move on then. Sorry about all those good feelings I had. But yeah, I mean, look, you know, Shotzi hitting up MLW to follow the theme that you had earlier on, you know, where it's like, it's always interesting to see what people do with their releases. Well, you know, Shotzi decided to go hard. She did the GCW, and she's been a part of MLW. She did their didn't she do their Halloween show recently? I think she did doing her Halloween Havoc style hosting gimmick, you know, which suits her well. That's part of what she is. Yeah, I mean, good for her that she's still going around working and whatnot. And yeah, and poor Matt Cardona just sitting there twiddling his thumbs, waiting for the call from Paul Levesque. Mm-hmm. Gee, when was that going to happen?
Right, Josh? Exactly. We come a lot later on. As a headline that was out there a lot throughout the year. He's basically like, just please hire me. Please hire me.
One last thing real quick.
Yeah.
Congratulations on Carlito for stealing so much money from WWE while he was there. What an incredible, like, who knew that the grifters were still alive and well in pro wrestling? Incredible stuff. The guy gets hired, does basically nothing, just shows up, you know, stands around and gets paid all sorts of money. What a fantastic, I wish I could have a job like that. I know. Honestly.
Doesn't everyone. Yeah. He just appeared with the Judgment Day. It was just odd and was just there. And then he wasn't.
And then it's like, no, probably someone opened the books, you know, and TK was like, who is this guy? Exactly. Why are we paying him so much money? And he's laughing all the way back to Puerto Rico. Good for him.
He made some nice holiday money. That's for sure. All right. Well, we've come to the end of our show. We made it through the month of May. And again, before we let you go, go ahead and plug away where people can check you out on a weekly basis on the YouTube and also Voice of Wrestling. The floor is yours.
Well, first and foremost, Josh, thank you again so much for having me. You know, a little peek behind the curtain. When before Josh sent me the invitation to come join him for the month of May, I saw my good friend Jesse Collins on social media promoting his appearance on the show, and I'm like, why did Jesse get reinvited and not me? And shortly thereafter, I get the message from Josh. I was like, oh, thank God. Thank you so much. Thank you again for having me. You can follow me on youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes or subscribe to the Mr. Warren Hayes Show on any of your favorite podcast applications. I do a weekly recap of news and events and a lot of show reviews, match reviews as well. As part of the podcast, I do a weekly AEW Dynamite review as well. So if you're into that, well, there's another good reason for you to hop on board. If you subscribe to the YouTube channel, you will be privy to some weekly live streams. I do live streams a couple of times a week, and those are always fun. Got a great community going on there. And if you just want to read more about what I do over at voicesofwrestling.com, that's where you'll find my writings, or on Blue Sky at MrWarrenHayes.show.
Excellent. Well, it's been a great conversation as it was last year. You were always on my list. I'm looking at it right now. You were always there. I
appreciate it, John.
But you sent those vibes out and I felt them. I'm like, I have to get them on for American Thanksgiving here. But no, I appreciate the time and the insights and looking forward to speaking to you again sometime in the future. Warren Hayes, thanks so much.
Thank you, man.